place and experience. Indulge your senses with immersive game titles. Boost the excitement with our engaging promotional tools and generous network promotions. Be in control with XI Viewport Management Tool and experience seamless gameplay powered by X Platform. Enjoy place and experience as our partners do in over 20 regulated markets. And get ready to go big. Big play is on. Playson. Our partners do in over 20.
And we're live after perhaps some very slight technical difficulties there. Welcome back, one and all, to another edition of the Next.io Weekly News live with me, of course. I am joined today by my esteemed colleague and special guest, the one and only senior reporter for Next.io, Mr. Zach Thomas-Aku. Zach, how's things?
Yeah, going very well, Connor. Thanks for having me on.
No, the pleasure's all mine. We are here. We're both in a very rainy, very windy, very unpleasant and wet and miserable London as we gear up for the Easter weekend here. We've got a four-day weekend coming up. Lots to look forward to. Good Friday tomorrow. Zach, have you got any big plans?
Oh, well, I'm going to be going down to the coast, which should be lots of fun. And then I've got a lovely Sunday lunch. So, you know, lots to look forward to.
Oh, tremendous. That does sound tremendous.
How about you, Connor? What are you up to?
I was actually down on the South Coast last week. I went to Hastings for a lovely day out. And this week I'm going to the opera tomorrow. Oh, yes. Read it and weep. I'm going to the opera at the Barbican. For reasons unknown to me, not my usual thing, but we'll give it a go. And then again, yes, big Sunday lunch coming up at the end of the week. And then just a nice Monday to relax. Anyway, let me say before we carry on, thank you as always to Playson, our main sponsor for Weekly News. You keep us coming back here every week and we are very grateful for your support. Now, we've got a big story this week, Zach, that we're going to put pretty much all of our focus on in this episode. It's one of those companies that has been on a very rocky road for the past few years. It's been a super interesting trajectory, and obviously one of the companies that people are watching very closely at the moment to see what happens next. I am, of course, talking about 888. We've had a couple of big stories coming out of 888 this week, and we're going to examine those in a little bit more detail, but I feel I should maybe sort of set the scene a little bit, Zach. If I could turn back time, where would I go? I'd turn back time to July 2022, as I'm sure lots of 888 senior executives would also like to turn back time and maybe change their minds about taking on £2 billion in debt to buy William Hill's non-US assets from Caesars Entertainment. Because if you recall, they kind of bought that asset, that set of assets, at basically the worst time they could possibly have chosen in history. Because valuations were sky high, pretty much at all-time highs. Like I say, they had to take on huge debt to finance this deal, and it turned into a bit of a living nightmare, really. So let's fast forward to January this year. We have a new CEO in the shape of Per Widerström. He's got a whole new team backing him. He's totally overhauled the C-suite, and he implements a global cost savings program worth about £30 million. Okay, a reasonable start, but it's obviously not going to be enough to turn everything around on this particular ship. So then a little bit later, first week in March, a few weeks ago, 888 announced a strategic review of its B2C operations in the US, and announced that it was going to sever ties with Sports Illustrated. So at the time, 888 was active. And I suppose it's still active now because it hasn't completed this process, but it's winding down its operations in four states. So it's active in Michigan, Colorado, Virginia, and New Jersey with a combination of brands. You've got the SI Sportsbook in partnership with Sports Illustrated, SI Casino, and 888 Casino. So it's got a handful of little brands, not a huge presence. You know, we're always looking at these market share charts from the US, and it never really even registers on there. It's one of the other 50 brands that makes up the remaining sort of couple of percent of the market after all those top five or six market leaders. Anyway, so at the beginning of March, 888 said the profit margins are too low in the US, it's too tight, the competition's too high. And so they're shelling out $50 million over the next few years for the early termination fee to kind of get out of this agreement they have with Sports Illustrated. So that's one strategic change we've already seen this month. And then this week, they announced their full year 2023 results. I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but pro forma revenue was down 8% year on year to £1.7 billion. Revenue drop, the reduction in revenue there was driven by a mix away from a kind of move away from dot-com markets and towards regulated markets, which had about an £80 million impact. The firm had EBITDA of £308 million, but made a net loss of £56 million. It's still got net debt of £1.7 billion, which I think gives it something like a 5.6 times EBITDA leverage ratio, as in EBITDA to debt. So, you know, tough times remain for 888. Nothing has turned around yet. I think we discussed this a few weeks ago. We had some analysis from Regulus Partners about the fact that, okay, these numbers sound good, you know, £1.7 billion in revenue. You think, well, that's pretty good. But actually, the margins are so tight in this business and the costs are so astonishingly high that, you know, it really doesn't have much headroom for making any more mistakes, basically. So, Zach, you've been looking into this week, and this has all kind of come to a head now. And we've got a bit of a line in the sand, you could say, that 888's drawing. It's trying to put the past behind it and move on. Why don't you tell us about the new corporate rebrand that they announced, I think, just yesterday?
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Connor. So, yeah, I mean, I'll move on to the rebrand in a second, but I have to say observers of 888 might be feeling a little bit of deja vu, because this is the second time in 2 years that they've attempted like a broad corporate reset. So mm-hmm. The first time was in November 22 when Ittai Pazner gave it his go. At that time, the big theme was deleveraging, because they took on all this debt, as you said before, and then interest rates shot up, and suddenly servicing that debt was far more expensive. At that time, they aimed for to deleverage to 3.5 debt to EBITDA by 2025. Well, now today, well, I say today, but this week when they announced the reset, that's it's exactly the same goal, but moved back a year till 2026. So there's been a wasted year somewhere along the way. But yeah, I mean, the rebrand was what really caught people's eye, I think, and it got picked up a little bit in the mainstream press as well, that they're going to be rebranding to Evoke with a lowercase e as their new corporate identity.
I think, by the way, the lowercase letter for a brand name. It's a proper noun. I think it should have a capital E. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Yeah, I'm sure sub-editors everywhere are desperately trying to adjust the style guides. This is no different to the other big UK operators who did a rebrand like this, you know, GVC to Entain, Paddy Power Betfair to Flutter. And in all those cases, basically, you know, there's this, like, they all had different routes to get there. One was an investment fund, one was, you know, like a entity formed after a retail operator, merger. But really, they got there in the end. They're basically a holding company with lots of different brands, some international operations, but big operations in their old core markets. And so they think, well, we need to have a name maybe not associated with the brand. Vidastrom in the investor presentation said something like this, that, you know, like, people were confused. Are we 888? Are we William Hill? Are we 888 William Hill? So we need a new name. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world, personally. I mean, it's just going to be a new name, but, you know,
it's a corporate name, isn't it? It's not going to change the brands or
Yeah, I think maybe it's like a little indication of the the business is trying to think clearly about how the different parts fit together. Maybe it's a sign that they're taking corporate or reorg quite seriously. Also, a rebrand might not be the worst idea in the world. Observers will also know that they faced two pretty juicy regulatory scandals last year. The first was this mysterious Middle Eastern probe that led to the resignation of Itay Pazner. That was never quite explained what was going on there. Something to do with VIP accounts in the Middle East, in the grey markets. And then the FS Gaming, Kenny Alexander debacle, where a bunch of the old GVC guys tried to launch a takeover, put themselves in charge of 888, only for it to get swatted down immediately by the regulator, who was concerned about the ongoing, Entain's own ongoing Middle East and compliance scandal. The rebrand will need to be confirmed at the AGM, which will probably take place in the next few months. That's the big thing that caught Emma's attention.
Yeah, I think it is one of those stories that captures people's attention. But at the end of the day, Zach, it's not really going to mean anything. It's not going to have an impact unless 888's able to follow through with a new kind of corporate strategy. And I think that the management team set out a few of the pillars of that new strategy this week as well. Can you tell us a bit more about that, about what's going to change within the business? I mean, a name is what's in a name, you know? It's just superficial, isn't it, really? What's going to be the changes internally?
Yeah, I mean, like, the big headlines here are there's going to be a double down on core markets, and which have been flagging lately, as a few operators have found, including Entain, as well as a real focus on execution. Now, this focus on execution comes because, I mean, a lot of the themes are things that were brought up 2 years ago in the investor presentation. We need to focus on our core markets. We need to integrate William Hill. We need to realize these synergies, get some technological integration going on. But the issue is a whole year passed, and then pro forma revenues are down. So what went wrong? So Vidastorm, I think, knows that what they really need to do now is execute. Like, it's all very well having these plans, but they actually need to put them into practice. So he used the line, there's going to be a laser focus on execution. What does look like in practice? We have now pretty much an entirely new executive team. I think 7 of the top 10 C-level roles have been appointed since Vidastorm's took charge, I think, in November, though I can't remember that off the top of my head.
Yeah, back end of last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Also, I think Vidastorm is considered to have done quite well as the CEO of Fortuna, so there's a lot of goodwill on that. A lot of people believe that he's sort of got what it takes. I think getting slightly deeper into the guts of the organization, there's going to be they're going to try and avoid duplicating roles, clear delegation responsibilities, just making sure that everyone knows exactly what they're doing. As Peel Hunt, the analyst, said, key aspects of the business, say player bonusing, delivering infinite personalization, brand definition, are to be the responsibility of one of the top team, not duplicated as previously. So that's what they said. They went into a bit more detail of how they're going to approach this in something they call the 6 strategic initiatives, which are their sort of like how to get from A to B, which are basically 6 core themes that they're going to be focusing on. Before we move on to some other aspects of the strategy, the market's responding quite positively to this. I think they, the share price went up, and then Hunt has also reiterated its 888 buy rating with a 175p target price, which is quite a bit higher than the current 89p price.
Yes, it's about 100% higher, actually, isn't it? I think we've got a chart we can show from the past 5 days, having just a quick look at that share price. So, look, it's not huge. There's a quite nice jump on 26th of March, shortly after the results were announced, I guess. And it's up nearly 4% over the past 5 days. So thanks for that, Elizabeth. That's not bad. And it shows sort of a vaguely positive sentiment. I think, you know, having firms like Peel Hunt recommend a buy rating on the stock and a target price that's 100% ahead of where it is now, it's pretty positive. But if we have a look at the next chart we prepared, actually, which is the share price performance over the past 5 years, I mean, it's down. Even today, it's down nearly 50% on where it was 5 years ago. And if you look at the actual peak in September 2021, when shares were trading for £4.58 each, it's down, something like 80% since then, if my maths is right, at less than 90 pence a share today. So thanks for showing that, Elizabeth. It just goes to show how far the mighty have fallen in some sense, because I think everyone was a bit overvalued at that time. Everything kind of crashed in March 2020, didn't it? And then came back with this huge bounce for back end of 2021. And now we're kind of having seen this rationalization in the market. But it looks like, you know, if Peel Hunt's to be believed, then 888's a little bit undervalued at this point. Ross Stafford says, get a tenner on it. I'd rather just put a tenner on black. But you never know. It's easier. The fees are lower if you just put a tenner on black than buying stocks and shares. But yeah, it's been it's been just such a crazy journey at 888. It's been a bit of bad luck, probably a bit of mismanagement here and there. But it seems like a pretty sincere attempt to move things on and get back to a positive kind of situation. I suppose the alternative would be to declare bankruptcy and default on the £1.7 billion worth of debt. I don't know. I don't really understand the ins and outs of their agreements. But yeah, certainly lots of debt to carry on servicing. We're going to need to see some action, some lowering of costs, some improving revenues and so on. But we have had just this morning a new development in this whole saga, which is all about the US assets and Hard Rock Digital. And we're going to come onto that in just a few seconds. But first, I believe we have a short video message to play.
Teams, hundreds of studios, dozens of hub market partners, an industry-leading hub wallet, and just one API. Hub 88 is connecting businesses to a world of limitless content where the possibilities are endless. Hub 88.
Well, there you have it. So we are moving on to our next segment of this story, which is the sale of 888's US B2C assets to none other than Hard Rock Digital. We have had announced this morning that 888 has completed its strategic review of its US operations and reached an agreement to sell selected assets to Hard Rock Digital. We don't know exactly which assets, and we don't know what the value of this deal is. As I mentioned earlier, though, 888 has licenses and B2C operations in four states: Michigan, Colorado, New Jersey, and Virginia, I think. While Hard Rock Digital has operations in, again, a handful of states. I think they're also active in which ones? Can't remember. Also active in New Jersey and Virginia, possibly, but they can get access to Michigan, I believe, and Colorado. Is that right? Anyway, we don't know exactly which assets they are acquiring yet, but the deal is expected to complete in Q4 of this year. Now, whichever assets it hasn't sold, 888 revealed that it has also begun a controlled exit of its remaining B2C operations in the US, and it intends to fully cease operations right across the country by the end of 2024. So they're getting out of there. The exit should yield a recurring annualized benefit of approximately £25 million to 888's adjusted EBITDA starting from next year, and around £10 million of that figure is earmarked for reinvestment in growth initiatives. Nothing comes easy in this life, though, Zach. There are also going to be one-off cash expenditures of about £40 million expected as part of the exit. We already mentioned the $50 million to get away from this partnership with Sports Illustrated, which proved very costly and not very effective. But the financial ramifications of the sale and exit strategy have been factored into the previously announced financial targets for 2024. So Q1 revenue is projected to come in between 420 and 430 million pounds, which means 5% to 9% growth year on year. And as you mentioned, Zach, 888 retains this long-term goal of getting its leverage ratio under 3.5 times by the end of 2026. As I mentioned, that ratio is currently 5.6 times, so it's quite highly leveraged. And it also wants to increase its adjusted EBITDA margin. Well, who wouldn't? Now, I know you were having a look at Hard Rock Digital's background in the US and why you think this makes sense, this deal, if you do think so, or maybe you don't think that. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Connor. Well, I mean, what makes me think of, a few weeks ago, we had Next New York, where Chris Grove gave a quite well-received State of the Union address, where he went through the the players in US OSB and where they are and where they're going. And one thing he said that I thought was quite interesting is that Hard Rock really have an opportunity to try and leverage their Florida monopoly to try and build sort of a nationwide brand with a significant market share. So maybe, I mean, this could be a deal along those lines. It's difficult to see what 888 are selling exactly beyond maybe some database and some market access. I haven't gone through each individual one, but maybe they're looking to maybe get into iGaming in New Jersey or something like that.
Yeah, and they also have iGaming in Michigan, I think.
Yeah. So I think it is an interesting one. I mean, the thing is, I mean, the in Florida is still not certain whether that monopoly will be retained. It's still fighting legal challenges in the courts. Recently, the Florida Supreme Court said that you've used the wrong petition to try to challenge the compacts. But you know, you could challenge this in a different court, and which I'm sure West Flagler are doing right now. And then also there's a Supreme Court case, which where West Flagler are seeking to challenge the Seminoles compacts with the states. But you know, it's considered unlikely for them to review the case because it's quite it's considered unlikely for them to review the case because they have a lot of cases in their docket and they don't take every single one. But, you know, that it could fight some risks there. But, you know, long term, I mean, this is a monopoly in a state as big as Florida will be a cash cow, and it might give them the arms they need to fight like a serious marketing battle or put serious money into the product to try and get products parity. Well, I mean, once again, like US OSB is very, very competitive. We've got some very clever people who know what they're doing. It's going to be hard for them to really challenge the FanDuel DraftKings duopoly. But you know, maybe their ambitions aren't that high. Maybe they're looking to get a podium position in a few states. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, it is an interesting development, and who knows what will lead.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really interesting part. One of the things that people have been saying for ages about the US is that, and it seems so difficult to do, but it's like, if you can manage to carve out even single digit percentage market share across the US and keep your costs low enough, then you have the potential to run a profitable business.
Restrictive model. That's what
Yes, I think that's what they're kind of trying to do, yeah. And I think the Florida monopoly is an excellent opportunity to try and allow for something like that to happen. I would almost expect to see the opposite happen in terms of like, okay, we've got the Florida market, let's kind of put all our eggs in that basket then and start pulling out of these other states. But obviously, Hard Rock has ambitions beyond that. And it will be really interesting to see what happens next for both of those businesses, for 888 and Hard Rock. I think we had to come on here and talk about this today because 888 is actually it's almost as if it's a very different business today than it was last Thursday. So we've had some big changes this week. We don't know what the results of those are going to be just yet, but this is definitely one that we're going to carry on watching here at Weekly News and at Next.io. But unless there's anything else you think to say about this, Zach, I think maybe we should let our viewers go and get a head start on the bank holiday weekend. And maybe we should go and do the same ourselves.
Fantastic. That sounds like a great idea, Connor.
All right. We'll see you same place, same time next week from everyone here at Weekly News. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you again soon. Bye. We'll be right back.